So basically speaking, we're now going to be dealing with the Manu Samhita. So Manu is the, you know, basic or foundational scripture for understanding administration. So it's the basis, means in the Vedic time, then anyone who was in a position of administration, you know, whether it was from the aspect of the Kshatriya or the Brahmin, the ministers, then they had to know this scripture. All other Dharma Shastras, then they will define what's, you know, some aspect that is being emphasized, like Parasara, then what's in the Kali Yuga. These others may bring out some other aspect, you know, that may they felt was some of the detail wasn't there. But they're all based on Manu. Manu is the scripture when it comes to Dharma. Dharma so means the inherent nature of something. This is what one is trying to perceive. The inherent nature means what won't change. This is what you are dealing with. Now, there'll be a detail, right? So, let us say, take Newton's favorite, an apple, right? So, if we say, well, what's an apple? We say it's a red fruit. Okay, so red doesn't really define it. Fruit, okay, that gives a category. But the particular, what makes it a fruit separate from any other fruit, right? That will be its nature, right? Its generic nature will be that of a fruit, and its particular appleness, right? Red you find in so many things, right? You're sitting on a seat that's red. That doesn't make it a fruit or make it an apple. So this is important to note, is that certain elements, like, you know, the Kshatriya has a sword or knows martial arts, that's not what makes him stand apart. That's not the definition of a Kshatriya. Manu will never say Kshatriya is someone who has a sword and knows martial arts. That's not the definition. The definition is one who protects. Right? Does that make sense? So that element of protection, that is the inherent nature you can't change. Because even if the king is wounded on the battlefield, he can't fight. So then by definition, he wouldn't be a Kshatriya anymore. Does that make sense? If you're going by he fights. But if it goes by he protects, then in his mind, he's still trying to make some arrangement. Bhishmadev, when he's on the bed of arrows, he's still training Yudhishthir how to be a proper king. Right? So he's doing, performing Kshatriya duties. Right? This is the aspect. How to understand, how to find what is actually the nature of what you're dealing with. You can do this, that will make your administration very successful. You'll be able to make it, broaden it into many areas. You'll be able to take it to, you know, more and more detail. But you have to be able to define what it is that makes something what it is. If you can't do that, then everything will be in very generalized categories, and you'll deal with everything the same. And according to Chanakya Pandit, any leader who deals with everything the same will fail. Just the way it is, right? Why isn't a bureaucrat a leader? This one point. They deal with everything the same. It's the rule. That's the way it is. So they apply the rule to anyone. Doesn't matter who it is. And they'll find some way to, you know, justify that they're doing that. But that's the point. They have to justify why they're doing it, because it's not natural. They're a bureaucrat. They push papers. Leaders deal with people. Right? Each individual is different. So if you can't understand the underlying principle in which someone is functioning, you can't be a leader. Right? So to that degree, you can understand, to that degree, you'll be successful. Success meanings in greatness. Like Yudhishthira Maharaj, he's very good at it, so he can be emperor of the world. Right? Other kings like Drupad or Jarasandha or these others, they can run great, massive tracts of land with so many kings under them because they're quite good, not as good as Yudhishthira, but quite good. And then you have your local kings, right? You have your tribal chiefs as it gets smaller and smaller. Does this make sense? So that's the whole idea, is that they're able to apply the Dharma into all situations, because Dharma is the fundamental platform from which the administration works. Right? Brahmana means one who knows Brahman, so that'll be from that platform. Then, down from that, Kshatriya, is Dharma. That's the platform he functions from. That's what his occupation is based on. Vaishya, Artha, right? How to make money, economics, and Shudra, the senses, right? Because you're dealing with arts. Arts means engaging the senses in the sense objects in a way that is, you know, aesthetically pleasing for whatever the field is. It looks nice, sounds nice, tastes nice, you know, whatever it is, it's nice. Does it make sense? So this idea that Kshatriya, the leadership, is going to function at the platform of Artha, that's for Vaishyas. Because Vaishyas, they do, when you get into these big, big, big companies, you know, they're acting in one sense, you could say, like Kshatriyas, in that they're dealing with huge amounts of people and money and area, you know, and they have to, you know, give direction, but they will never be Kshatriyas. They'll always be Vaishyas, just bigger ones. So that's why the bottom line is economics. It's not people. This is the fun part. If we say people are the most important element, right? Especially if we're talking community, this, that, that means, and people means, and we have to be dealing on the Brahminical or the Kshatriya level. Because the others, when it comes to occupation, don't deal with people. Right? Brahman deals with the soul, right? The Kshatriya deals with the actual what you're looking at. The Vaishya deals with them, how they will fit into the economic system, what you can gain. The Shudra deals with them as someone who has that particular sense that they're addressing. Right? Does that make sense? So the Kshatriya is the one who deals with the complete material manifestation of the individual. So if we're going to say, oh, it's rules, it's laws, it's bureaucracy, it's a council, all these different things like this, you're not dealing with the Kshatriya level. You're dealing with the Vaishya level and Shudra level. Because bureaucrats technically are Shudras. Right? Because you need a leader to tell them what to do, because otherwise they don't know what to do. Right? They'll just make more rules, more papers. And they'll consider that a success, right? If all you do is push papers, if you have more to push, you're doing something. Right? Like that. So these are actual, real scenarios. You can say, oh, well, that's theoretical. No, it's not. It's so real, it scares a bureaucrat. So he'll have to say it's theory because, no, but pushing papers is all that there is. So therefore, to you saying that there's something more than that, that's theory. That's the reason they say it's theory. Because there's something more than their well, right? Like the frog in the well. There's something bigger than their well. Oh, that's theory. So there's something bigger than their computer and their email. That's scary. To someone who is not functioning as a leader. Leader, it's people. And people mean trouble. They don't mind the trouble because they can deal with people. Right? That's why they don't become frustrated. That's why it says Kshatriya. In the face of battle, they don't become disturbed. Why not? Because they're dealing with people, so it doesn't bother them. Does that make sense? That's the thing. One may say that, well, the Brahman, he doesn't like to get involved, because one of the things of knowledge in the, was it 13th chapter, is, you know, stays away from, you know, the whole big, you know, social scene. But that's because there's something higher. There's the element of Brahman, transcendence. So for that, they don't want to get involved in the day-to-day little picky material elements. But it's not that they can't. It's just that they'd rather not. Well, Kshatriyas, they have the same knowledge, but they're comfortable to get involved. That's what makes them a Kshatriya, right? So the difference between the Brahmin and the Kshatriya is the Brahmin doesn't really want to get involved, while the Kshatriya doesn't mind. Otherwise, it's the same entity, right? Now, when you hear, so therefore, in the Brahmin and Kshatriya, they're going to be talking about Shastra and people, right? And if they're talking about rules and economics and money, then you know you're not talking about Brahmins and Kshatriyas. Then you're talking about Vaishyas and Shudras. Understand? So this is just, first, you have to be able to get to the principle that's working. If you can do that, then it makes it very clear what kind of choices you have. Right? Then, according to your own expertise, then you apply that. Right? To what you think will be best for the situation. But unless you can see what are your options because of what is the nature of something, right? What can I do? I have a bunch of apples. What can I do? I want to cook something. So what can I do? Right? Make a bitter sabji? Make some dal. Right? Make a flower arrangement or... possibly, you know, get my Ferrari to function better. What can I do, right? I can make a salad, I can make a chutney, right? I can serve it as it is, as fruit, right? So unless I understand the nature of it, I'll come up with all ideas of what I should be able to do with it. Well, the apple is red and these seeds are red and we're kind of short on seeds, so we could turn the apples into seeds because they're red, right? And the white part, we're not quite so sure what to do with, but the red part, yeah, that's what we know what to do with. You know, the only question would come up is, would it be all right that some of the seeds also have a little green in them, because some of the apples are a little greener, but, you know, red and green go well together. You know, it's kind of like a, you know, Christmas, right? It's red and green, so, hey, you know, creates a festive situation, so it should work. Does that make sense? So that's the point, unless you understand the nature. So, this is Manu Siksha. So, basically what it means is that you're dealing with... Oh, okay, here we've got the appendices also. What it is that you have the Manusamhita, which is approximately about, well, it depends upon how it's done here, but everything that's in the Manu is in here. Now, if we'll notice on the table of contents, around about page 8, 6, not all of them seem to have numbers, but about page 6, you notice that there's an end of the Manu there, conclusion of the sacred law. Then after that, you have appendices. So what these appendices, they basically just reflect whatever is there within the Manu, right? Has the same order of numbers and everything like that, same titles. So what's happened here is, what's before this point, means what's before 154, that will be what you could say would be directly more usable by, you know, the Gaudiya Vaishnava community. How we would view and apply Daivavarnashram, right? Because Manu is made so that even those who don't understand God consciousness will still be engaged. So there has to be authority. There has to be a process, there has to be results gained, so that people progress. So you're going to add in many things like worship of the forefathers, other things like this. You know, standard bona fide stuff that we don't really care so much about, right? So that will be found within the appendices. So all it is those things in the Manu, in its order that it's found in Manu, that aren't, you know, directly important for us, they've been lifted and placed into this appendices. That makes sense? So sometimes you may have heard something from Manu and this and that. Generally, the things that you've heard about, they're in the appendices. You know, oh, but if he steals, then we'll cut off his hand. That's in the appendices. Because that's not what you're going to do. Right? So it's not so important. So the 154 is your main thing, but from 100 after that up to 211, then that's your almost 60 pages there. That is things that are there. That's important. Now, someone who understands the principles on which Manu works can gain a lot of understanding from these appendices. But you have to be able to see the principle at work. Otherwise, you'll get very much overwhelmed by what's here, like forbidden food. Like, like the village pig you can't eat, right? You can't eat the village chickens either. It means even just, you know, chickens just aren't eaten. Right, they scratch around in the dirt, right? Eat all kinds of garbage, right? So they're not eaten. You know? Does that make sense? But let's say a deer or a boar, that could be offered in sacrifice. Right? So is that useful for you? You know, you're planning the Sunday feast menu, so right? So therefore it's in the appendices. Right? But understanding now, why isn't the village pig or the chicken, you know, considered important? Because they're unclean. They eat refuse, right? Dogs aren't eaten. Crows aren't eaten, right? Because they all eat garbage. Right? Does that make sense? But these other animals that can be used in sacrifice, then they lead a lifestyle that's within the context of their nature. They're not living off of the waste of humans. Does that make sense? So they're in a pure state. Does that make sense? So that's the principle. So the idea is whatever foodstuff is in a pure state. So then that makes sense why within the things that aren't animals, like why mushrooms and these other things aren't eaten. Because the mushrooms, they just live off of, you know, some rotting dead thing, right? Once it's rotten and dead, you know, and merged into the earth, then you get all kinds of, you know, you get your other vegetables. But until it does that, these other vegetables won't grow. Mushrooms will grow. So in that stage of transformation, where it hasn't transformed, then it's mushrooms. So that's why it's not recommended. Right? Same with the animals. Does this make sense? You're dealing on a principle here. You have to be able to go on beyond. Otherwise, one won't understand what's going on. And it'll just be a matter of, you know, opinions and very superficial approaches. Does that make sense? So, now in here also we'll notice that in here you'll have, in just looking at these first six pages, you have discourses, right? You have discourse one, discourse two, like this. So discourse one is on the creation. Right? Primary and secondary. Because if you don't understand that, you won't really understand how to apply the philosophy that will be discussed in understanding this, right? Because this is a Kshatriya area, right? Brahman and Kshatriya area. That means it's always based on Shastra. It's always based on philosophy, right? When a Kshatriya says, an actual Kshatriya says, it's theory, it's not practical. What he means is, it's from the Shastra, right? It's correct philosophically, but you haven't been able to connect it to its use, its application. That's what a Kshatriya means by it's not practical. Does that make sense? But if it's not based on scripture, based on authority, the Kshatriya is not interested. Modern's not good enough. Does that make sense? Well, if you hear others say, oh, it's theory, it's not practical, means it's not going to make me money because there's too many restrictions, and the most direct and easy way for me to make money is not going to be practical. So there's a difference. You have to be able to tell the difference between when a Brahmin's talking Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, right? In mentality, of course. We're devotees, so we're not so worried. But the point is like this. This is a book, right? Now, because we chant Hare Krishna, don't care for the rules, is there some other use for this? I could cook lunch with it, right? This is a table. So which one goes first? Do I put the table, then put the book on top, or do I put the book and then put the table on top? You understand? So you have to be, if you can't distinguish, that means you're not intelligent. So this idea is that we chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for the rules. That is for people who are unintelligent. Intelligent person can tell the difference. There is a difference, and it's always going to be there. So this idea is that I don't care for the rules, and that's the symptom of my Krishna consciousness. No, that's called an unrestricted Vaishya Shudra. Or a Dvija Bandhu. We have to give credit where credit's due. Right? A Brahmin or a Kshatriya that's not functioning in their natural situation. That make sense? So the point is it's a science, like anything, right? We could go out and say, oh, we chant Hare Krishna. So it doesn't matter how we ride the bicycle. No, there's a very specific way. You don't ride it properly, you'll, you know, get hurt. So the same way, you don't make the distinction in administration, you'll get hurt. It's that simple. Okay, so discourse one we see is the creation, primary and secondary, so we have to be able to understand the philosophy. Otherwise, how do we know that the principles are being followed, right? There has to be a foundation. No foundation, no building. You want to build an administration, it has to be on foundation. Foundation is Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Two, then we're establishing what is the proper source of knowledge, and then what is the sacraments, we see, and then the Brahmacharya Ashram. Then, having done the Brahmacharya Ashram, and three, you get into the Grihastha Ashram, discourse three. Right? Discourse means chapter, right? But because it's a discussion, then it's a discourse, right? Then chapter four will be how a, means the three will be define what a Grihastha is and his duties. Four will establish how he'll maintain himself, right? Because a Grihastha has to take care of himself, right? Five, then what will be the proper things, what's proper food, what's proper purifications, and then it will end with, having done all that, then it will define women. Because women, all that, plus something more. Right? Does that make sense? Well, say, oh, they have this section here just for the women, so they're less. No, it's all of the above plus this. Does that make sense? So it's the opposite. Right? Then, so that then you dealt with Grihastha Ashram, right? What, how you establish one, how one gets married, what are the duties, then how one maintains oneself, because in duties there's the ashram, and then there's the varna. Does that make sense? You have both. Then you're going to have what will maintain purity, right? Because the idea is that you're uplifting yourself to Krishna consciousness, so that means pure state. So how the food and other ways to purify and how you deal with your women, right? You deal with your women right, everything stays nice. You don't, everything falls apart. That's simple. Then, so then six will be the vana, split between Vanaprastha Ashram and Sannyasa Ashram. And then that ends Ashram Dharma. Right? There's a conclusion there. And yeah, conclusion of Ashram Dharma gives a very simple thing. Mano always gets right down to very simple, straightforward stuff. You can always apply it, right? Because it's for a Kshatriya. He has to always be able to apply it. Then, in Discourse 7, it defines the Kshatriya, his lifestyle and what he is, what's his character and everything like that. Then in 8, then dealing with lawsuits, right? Doesn't deal with, you know, going out and using his sword. Lawsuits, how he deals with law, right? So how to arrange the court and everything, and it will deal with how you say, civil lawsuits, criminal lawsuits, and domestic, right? And so then you'll get through that, and then in 9, that'll be the domestic concerns. So 8 will be how to establish the court and civil and criminal law. Then 9 will deal with domestic law, and then the most strongest of all the sins, like that. And then 10, yeah, that was 9. 10 will be, okay, now that has defined how society will work when everything's nice, right? Everything is there, it can work how it works, right? Are we all comfortable, or? Oh, okay. No, it's okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, it's okay. Yeah. Okay, so 10 now is when things aren't working properly and a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra can't perform their duty as would be natural. So what would be, how would they deal with that? Right? How to deal when things don't go right. So this is the fun part, because they'll say, oh, the Vedic thing, okay, it's perfect 5,000 years ago, but it doesn't apply today because things are different. No, there's a whole chapter in Manu, what to do when things are different. Right? And this was spoken millions of years ago. Right? So it wasn't spoken 5,000 years ago, it was spoken millions of years ago. Right? Then chapter 11, then from performing, so in other words, the able to perform your varna duties if there's something wrong, what you do is an alternative. And then chapter 11, then in ashram, performing your particular duties, you don't do something right, what is the correction for that? Right? And then 12 is then how to bring everything in line with the scripture. Right? And yeah. And so that concludes the law, right? Does that make sense? Now we'll go through it again, because that was by chapter. Now, Manu mentions that there's 25 topics of the law, right? Law means the law of Manu, not the, as we'll see, legal titles. No, that's another thing. That's for, there's 18 legal titles, right? Within the 25 laws. You know, it means areas of law, right? Then in one area, then in a few of them, then you have the legal titles. It means what a kshatriya does on a legal basis. But this means the laws governing human life, right? So then we see is that everything is according to, we give the headings, but the topics, right, those are the 25 laws, right? So we see topic one is the creation, the primary. And the top 1B is the secondary creation, right? And then how everything's based on that. Topic 2 is the rule of the sacraments, right? Going back to the beginning. In ashram dharma, then you see there, ashram dharma then deals with the rule of the sacraments. So you can tell where everything falls. That's what's important here. So you know how to get a framework, how all the different laws connect together, right? So 3 is the how to be a student. 4, how to deal towards gurus, means those who are senior to you, right? Continuing, then it goes back into, in other words, the respectful behavior towards gurus is so important that it comes right in the middle of 3, right? Topic 3 are the ordinances of studentship, so after you give the basic principles, then you have to respect the guru. It's so important it becomes its own topic. Then it continues back with 3, right? Let it go. 3 continued. Where 4 is, it doesn't mentioned. How did that get left out? I think this is slightly different. Means this is something that gives the basic. Oh. This is the levels aren't all there. That's why it's so short. You don't have it clicked on all 9 levels. That's why, see, you're getting all these titles, these here are not in here. That's what it is I'm looking at, because all the detail is in here. It's not, so it says you've gone down to, I think, 8 levels here. That's why we don't have it. I mean, it doesn't matter, it's in the text, but it's... Yeah, it just means that it just has to be clicked on and then create a new table of contents. But it doesn't matter. Well, it will just work through the book. So, yeah. Then you have the in Grihastashram, the five. How would Brahmachari graduate? You could say, well, that's Brahmachari ashram. No, a Naistika doesn't graduate. So he only graduates if he's going to become a grihastha. So therefore, it's the first of this. It's also important to learn how the Vedic, because you always have an overlap of something. So which goes where? That's always an important element. Then 6, the law of marriage. 7, the marriage rites. Right? No, in other words, law of marriage is what's the fundamental considerations in marriage. And then 7 is the kinds of marriage. 8, the 5 great sacrifices, right? Prabhupada talks about that. You know, the debts that you have when you're born, the 5 great debts. So this is the detail. Most of it you'll find in the appendix. But then 8a is the Shraddha rites. Then 9, how you maintain yourself. Then 10, the duties of a snataka. Snataka means a Gurukul graduate. What would be the duties of a Gurukul graduate as a... Grihastha, right? Like that. Then 11, it would be the lawful and forbidden food. 12, the purification of men and things. And 13, the laws concerning women, right? So that's within... See, each discourse deals with so many of the topics according to what connects to each other, right? What's Brahmachari ashram, what's Grihastha ashram, what's like this. Then in 6, the Vanaprastha ashram is topic 14, sannyas is 15, then the duty of kings, that's 16, 17, the manner of deciding lawsuits, and then the 18 titles of law, right? So title 1, right? So civil lawsuits are 1 through 10 out of 18, so legal 1, non-payment of debts. And, okay, then 17a, you're going back to manner of describing. So the non-payment of debts is pretty straightforward. Then they get into how do you examine a witness, right? Because what's going to happen is a conversation. He's going to define how you deal with the first title. And then in dealing with the first title, if there's a problem, then you bring up witnesses, right? In other words, if it's straightforward, the two parties can discuss and you conclude it, great. If not, you need witnesses. Right, so when you bring up witnesses, then it as a topic continues. But that's all part of how you establish the court of law, right? Because otherwise, if we bring up then, it won't be as relevant because you haven't understood its context in being applied to the case. Does that make sense? It's a conversation, so it's going to go as someone discusses it. Then back to legal title 1, non-payment of debts. Now that we've dealt with witnesses, then we'll finish that. Then 2, deposit and pledge. 3, sale without ownership. 4, concerns among partners. 5, resumption of gifts. 6, non-payment of wages. 7, non-performance of agreements. Right? You do the resumption of gifts. You get something, you don't like it, you can take it back within 10 days. You have a refund. Right, unless of course you ate it or something. Right, non-performance of agreements. That's the, now you have your warranties, your other things like this. They're working within these. Non-payment of wages. Someone doesn't pay. If you'll notice, all this stuff is very contemporary. It's going on right now. Repentance of transactions. Excuse me. That's the not resumption of gifts. Repentance of transactions. That's where you bought it and you wish you hadn't bought it, or you sold it and you wish you hadn't. So you have a certain amount of days that you can correct that. And that includes marriage, right? Especially for those who make more of a business deal out of it. then, you know, something goes wrong there. You find out, you know, you meet the family, they seem, you know, everything seems to be nice. You arrange the marriage. When you get there to the marriage, you find out that the groom or the bride, you know, something is very different about them, right? You know, they don't have one foot, or they're a dwarf, or, you know, something else that was not apparent, because you're dealing with the family, you're seeing like that. So it's something that's, they didn't talk about, you didn't know to ask, because you didn't know, you know, their family had some interesting elements. So if that happens, then you can still deal with that. Does this make sense? Because people cheat. The whole point of law is people cheat. Right? 9, disputes between owners of cattle and herdsmen. Right? You know, in other words, the cattle ate somebody's fence, so, you know, who has to pay for that? The cattleman? Or the man who owns the cattle. You know, these different things. These are important. How do you work that out? 10, disputes regarding boundaries. Right? You know, that's a very popular European consideration. Like that. So that ends the civil law. Now, the criminal law will be legal titles 11 to 15. So you have defamation, assault, theft and robbery, violence, and adultery. These are considered, you know, criminal. Because before that, that's civil. So to be able to tell the difference between what's civil law and criminal law is also very important. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, then, we'll give more weight. There's more weight in criminal law than there is in civil law. But we, for our own political purposes, love to mix them up just to get something more solid done. Right? Then domestic concerns is 16 and 17. So 16 is the laws concerning husband and wife. And then 17 is division of inheritance. Right? How, yeah. Then 18 will deal with mortal sins. So that was the laws, but here, mortal sins. So laws concerning gambling and betting. Right? How do you deal with that? And how do you control these things? Because the ideal is if you can get rid of all these criminal things, defamation, assault, theft and robbery, violence and adultery, if that's not in your kingdom will go great. To that degree it's there, you're going to have a problem. Right? And if the government takes tax on those and makes money off of it, you have even more problem. Right? Okay. Then punishment. Okay, 18, so that was legal title 18, okay? So now the legal titles are finished. Now we're going back into the main 25 laws, or topics. So now topic 18 is how to remove men noxious like thorns. In other words, who actually bothers society? Who has to be removed? Because otherwise they'll be sentimental. No, but they're this and that, and they also have, you know, desires, but no, they're the ones that are ruining society. How to identify the bad apple in the basket? You can say, but he's also an apple. He has his aspirations. He also would like to become a chutney. No, but he's rotten. He's not going to become anything. So he has to be removed. All right? And then that concludes Kshatriya Dharma. Then we see here in topic 19, we have duties of Vaishyas and Shudras, right, which covers 2 pages. Fun, no? Isn't that? Kshatriya Dharma, just Brahminical Dharma, just went from page, you know, well, here where we start, 8 up until 71, right? And then Kshatriya Dharma started here, you know, it's basically 73 and went until 128, so a little bit less than the Brahminical duties. Then Vaishyas and Shudras, their duties are 2 pages. Interesting, no? Right? Because once you've defined the other things, you only have 2 pages more of stuff to define for Vaishya and Shudra. Because they're going to follow the Brahminical lifestyle. Right? Does that make sense? We'll get back to that. Oh, no, we won't. We'll do it now. That the ashram dharma is Brahminical ashram. That is the lifestyle for the whole Varnashram system. So Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, that is their lifestyle. That's why you can call Vedic culture, Brahminical culture, or Varnashram Dharma. They all mean exactly the same thing. Right? There is no Kshatriya lifestyle. Right? Does that make sense? There's dharmas meaning as an occupation. Right? And there's certain aspects of Brahminical dharma that may become more prominent. But it's all based on Brahminical dharma. So that's why, so the Vedic culture, Brahminical dharma means what will give, make you realized in Brahman. So that's the basis. That's why it's a superior culture. So even your Shudras, their lifestyle is still connected to what's beneficial to Brahman. If they can understand it, great. If they can't, still the others who are able to appreciate it can. Right? The musician, he's singing, let's say, some Ram Leela like this, and you know, doing it very nicely, very expertly. To him, it may just be the expertise of the notes and the intonation and the balance between the music and the instruments and all that. And you know, there's no God consciousness at all. But the people who are listening to it, then they appreciate it within that context. Does that make sense? So in other words, what he's doing is perfectly valid for God consciousness. If you're God conscious, you'll get the benefit. Even if you're not, others who are God conscious will get the benefit. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, right? The man is selling organic vegetables. To him, it's just something that sells. He would be selling regular vegetables, but people will pay more for organic vegetables, right? And they don't really necessarily cost any more to grow, right? The cows make cow dung, and it's just sitting there. You don't know what to do with it. You throw it into the fields. You don't have to buy any fertilizer. So, you know, but people will pay more for it. So he's selling organic vegetables. Why? He's a businessman, right? Now, because he's selling those, now we can buy those and offer them to the deities. So he doesn't see him in context of Krishna consciousness, but we do. Does that make sense? The man just likes to make nice fabric and nice designs and the colors, and he's so absorbed in this aspect. So he makes all these varieties of saris. He's not God conscious, but he makes something that people who are then can buy and use. Does that make sense? That's why the Vedic culture is superior. Because everything and everyone in it is connected to something that's directly usable within the devotional process. That's why it's called Daiva Varnashram. But it's up to the individual how God conscious they are. Does that make sense? Right. So there is only Brahminical culture. Then you have occupation. So for the ashram duties are the Varna duties of a Brahmin. Does that make sense? What you do as a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas, these are the occupation of a Brahmin. Right? Because part of your thing is worshipping the deities, worshipping the gurus, this, that. The Brahmins do that as their living. Right? The brahmacharis go begging, right, as a way to generate humility. The Brahmins do that as their occupation. Does this make sense? Right, there is no separate occupation between their ashram and their varna. But kshatriya, it's a separate. The occupation is separate. That's why it's documented here. So first, that's why it's bigger. The Brahminical is documented because that is 5 out of 8 aspects of varnashram. Right. So the first 6 chapters are brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasa, and the Brahminical duties. As an occupation, right? Right? Then we see 7, 8, 9, then are how the Kshatriya is going to function, right? It means, in other words, now we've done Kshatriya Varna, right? So, and then we have the 2 pages where we do Vaishya and Shudra, because you're just adding on to that a little bit something that's specific to them. Does that make sense? Right? So then that ends. The topic 19. So that's conclusion of the natural conduct for the 4 varnas, right? So that's natural. Then we go into what things are wrong. Then you have the topic 20 is the origin of the mixed varnas, because why would things be in distress? If everyone's doing their duties, right? Artha comes from dharma. Everyone does their duties. Why would there be a problem, right? Because of Varna Shankara. Remember, beginning of Gita, that was Arjuna's worry, right? We kill all the men here, the women aren't protected, we're going to end up with Varna Shankara, right? So then that will ruin the society, right? So the things that people are fighting over now won't exist anymore, right? We're worried about this big religious war, but there won't be anything left. That's his point. Because Varna Shankara is what disturbs the society so that nothing functions right. Therefore, there's no artha. And when there's no artha, that's when there's a problem. Right? Does that make sense? Then the law for all castes in times of distress. So once you've described what is the cause of it, then how everyone's going to deal with it. Right? Topic 21. Then 22 is the law of penances, right? This is in atonement. Then 23 is the threefold course of transmigration. This is, you know, quite interesting. How what you do gets you what body, right? You steal grains, you become a rat, right? You know, stuff like that. We don't think about it. It's direct. You know, you only become these things because that's what that does as an occupation. Right, so whatever you're doing wrong in Varna or Ashram, you take up that lifestyle as an animal who does that. That is their occupation, so it's not wrong to do. You know what I'm saying? You like to steal grains as a human, you don't do that. But a rat can do that as an occupation. So since you like to steal grains, then you should become a rat, right? Because that's your preference. Right? Then stealing grains is your occupation. There's no sin. Right? Rats don't get sin for stealing grains. Right? They might get killed, but hey, that's part of the, you know, what do you call it? The risk, you know. Without risk, you know, there's no gain, right? So then topic 24, result of good and bad action, right? They get into actually how within the modes things are functioning and different things. Then 25, manner of obtaining supreme bliss. Right? So how you get back to transcendence. So we see topic 25 and topic 15 of the sannyasa ashram, those deal with straight philosophy. These two sections are just philosophy. Not meaning impractical, meaning that this is how you're going to get to the transcendental position by understanding Vedanta. Right? And then it concludes, that also gives on how you're going to deal with, you know, what doctrines or what philosophies are to be rejected, right? The supreme source of knowledge and the secret portions of these institutes, how to get to the principle behind it. Because even though this is very exhaustive, it doesn't deal with every situation you'll come across. Okay. Now, another thing is very important, why this is only basically to be studied by leaders. Right, specifically Brahmins and Kshatriyas, Vaishyas is fine, but why specifically they can handle this and not Shudras? Because in here is anything that might happen. Right? In other words, all these laws and all the details of the laws, everything is there so that an administrator can make a proper decision if the situation comes up. So you could be running your kingdom the whole time and never come across so many of them, right? Because the way you're running it, the people are religious, they don't do these things. Does that make sense? So, but if it is there, it's here defined, so you can take care of it. Does that make sense? So that means everything in the way of thievery is going to be there, even if it took you your whole lifetime to see all of them. But they're all within that few pages. Does this make sense? So that's why Kshatriyas and Brahmins can handle this. Brahmins, it's knowledge. Kshatriyas have a little bit of, how you say, you know, courageousness and stuff. Because others can't handle this. You know, all these different things, and it just looks crazy to them, is that it's just one bad thing after another, after another, after another. But that's what you may run into. So you would want to know all your options. Does this make sense? So that's why Prabhupada says in the Gita that the leaders should study this. He didn't say general devotees. Because general devotee, Manu, will freak them out. No, guaranteed. I've seen it myself. I have so many God brothers, they start talking about it's freaky, it's this, it tells this and that. Most of the time it's because the only thing that they'll really notice is what's in the appendices, right? Which is basically one quarter of what's in here, right? So three quarters they won't even notice. Why? Because they're not administrators. They're not leaders. And so for them, all they notice is somebody got a finger cut off, you know, and this and that, and why that didn't happen to a Brahmin. The Shudra did this. He got, you know, capital punishment, but the Brahmin wasn't. Why? You know, it favors the Brahmins. This is all you hear is this kind of stuff. What anti-authority kind of stuff. The point is you have to know the mentalities of them. Therefore, the decisions are made. Does this make sense? And devotees being brahminical, that would be what's there. That's why so much of it's been moved to the back. Yes?
Is there any kind of brahmas who can't relate to Mahasamhita?
Dvija bandhus, yeah. There's one section in here where it's, let's see, in the Shraddha rites, in the appendices, feeding of Brahmins, whom not to invite to a Shraddha, 164. Okay. 63, 64. So you'll also notice is that there's, well, in here it's all small, but there's a smaller print use. When there's a change in print, then that means that it is... the smaller stuff is what wouldn't be used. The bigger would be what's in the main thing. But we're trying to give the context. Whom not to invite to Shraddha? Okay, for a rite sacred to the god, he who knows the law will not make too close inquiries regarding an invited Brahmin. Right? So when you're doing something for the demigods, you know, that that you understand they're practicing Brahmana, that's good enough. They know the ritual, they know what to do, that's good enough. You don't look much farther than that. But when one performs a ceremony in honor of the mains, one must carefully examine the qualities of the guest, right? Because guest is defined as a Brahmin, right? Everybody else is not necessarily. Relatives aren't guests, they're family. Friends aren't guests, they're friends. You understand? So here, Manu has declared that all this is going to be Brahmins. We're not talking about anyone else, because as he says, the quality of the guest, the Brahmin. Manu has declared that those Brahmins who are thieves, outcasts, eunuchs, or atheists are unworthy to partake of oblations of the god in main. So those who don't believe in the Vedic literature, that's atheistic. They are unqualified. Even though they know the rituals, they're still not qualified. They could do a demigod worship, but they can't do a Shraddha rite. Right? Let him not entertain a snataka who wears his matted locks as a student. Means he didn't shave his head when he finished. You know, he got attached to his matted locks, wanted to show everyone how austere he was. No, he has to shave. Right? Who has not studied the Veda, right? Brahman who hasn't studied the Veda. One afflicted with a skin disease. You know, that would mean something very bad, obvious. Not just you got a pimple or that, but you have some big rash or leprosy. So that means there's some strong sin there. Right? A gambler. Nor one who sacrificed for a multitude, right? He just sacrifices for anybody. He doesn't make discrimination, so he's taking on a variety of karma. Physicians, right? Temple priests, sellers of meat, those who subsist by shopkeeping must be avoided, right? So he's a Brahmin, but he keeps a shop. Right? Paid servant of a village, right? Means then there's the villages maintaining him. Right, so that's all. A lot of devotees love to get into these bureaucratic little cubby holes because you get paid. So that kind of a, you know, if he's a Brahmin, not that. Deformed or black nails or teeth, because that means he's an informant. Right, one who opposes his teacher. Right, so therefore, you know, those who speak badly about their teacher and all that drops their position. Doesn't matter who they are, even if it's a modern thing to do. One who has forsaken the sacred fire, and an usurer. Usurer means a banker or money lender. One suffering from consumption, tuberculosis. One who subsists by tending cattle. Right. A younger brother who marries or kindles a fire before the elder. One who neglects the five sacrifices. An enemy of a Brahmin race. right? So those who are after the Brahminical culture. Elder brother marries a kindus after the younger, when it belongs to a company or a corporation. Ooh. Like that. So they had companies and corporations millions of years ago. We think it's a new thing. No, it's always been there. Right? It's just not as ugra karma as, you know. Just like the stock market, they had it before. When they're dealing in the rice market in Japan, the Romans had the stock market, but it was dealing with stock, with goods. So what's the value of it? Now there's less of it, so it sells for more. So you have 100 kilos or something. It's more valuable than it was, let's say, last season when there was double the amount, so it was much lower price. So that's how the stock market originally worked. Now it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what's available. You understand? So these things have always been there. Some modern man thinks we're unique, we're different, it's never been here before. So when devotees say, oh, times has changed. No, that's why I so strongly, it doesn't change. It says there, company or corporation. This is being spoken by Bhrigu Muni, who's the son of Brahma, one of the 10 sons. And he's speaking in front of Brahma to an assembly of sages. And he's talking about companies and corporations. Right? So now, are we going to claim that, yeah, that's something we just worked out in the last 50 years? No, we just figured it out in the last few hundred years. It's always been there. Right? Just people weren't, you know, that business-minded to figure it out. An actor or singer, one who's broken the vow of studentship, or whose first wife is a Shudra, the son of a remarried woman, a one-eyed man, and he was house, a paramour of his wife resides, right? In other words, he's there, his wife is there, and his wife has a paramour, and he doesn't say anything. So that Brahman also. So do we get the idea? One who forsakes his mother, his father, a teacher without sufficient reason, right? He was a contract or alliance with outcasts, either through the Veda or through marriage, right? A bard, an oilman, a perjurer, wrangles or goes to law with his father, keeper of a gambling house, right? Maker of bows and arrows, trainer of elephants, right? So if you have a trainer of elephants, he can't do your shredder rites, okay? A bird fancier, okay? And he who teaches the use of arms. That's why you see Drona wasn't doing the certain things, you know, Domya was doing. Right? Though he's a Brahmin. So if it was a Shudra rite, Domya would do. If it was something for the demigods, Drona could do. He who does not follow the rule of conduct. One who constantly asks for favors. He who lives by agriculture. Right? Does that make sense? So a Brahmin who knows the sacred law should shun its sacrifices, both the gods and the man. To both the gods and manes, these lowest of twice-born men, whose conduct is blameworthy, and who are unworthy to sit in the company at a repast. Right? So it's interesting, because he says, when you're dealing with the demigods, don't worry about it so much, but if you're dealing with the forefathers, you shouldn't have any of these doing. Right? And at the end, so one who's worshiping the demigods and the forefathers should never have any of these guys do anything for you. You catch the subtlety? Right? The first time he said, only worry about it if it's for the forefathers. But at the end, he says, also for the demigods. In other words, if you don't know about it, don't inquire. But if you know about it, don't have any of these do either. Right? Does that make sense? Because what you know about, that's what you are liable for. We get the idea? So this detail is what Manu goes into. And that was in the appendix. That's why that's removed, right? Does that make sense? But you can see from there, by studying it, that there's so many elements that we will consider as normal. Like now, we're looking at, you know, corporations and companies, how to organize them, and then make our leadership according to that. But that's for Vaishyas, not for Kshatriyas. So it means administration can't be based on a corporation, right? Because then that means you're running a business. And then, if you say, but, you know, it's practical, great, then it better be making money. So if it's not making money, then that's really sad. right? And you can't say no, but then we tax the yatras and all. But that's the duty of a kshatriya. So if you're taking up corporation, it means you have to generate the money. You can't tax. So you can't just take what you like. That's cheating. Then you just take what you like from here and there. You know, it's like, well, from this subject, I'll take all the paneer, you know, and from there, I'll take, you know, this. No, you don't, it doesn't work like that. You know, you can't just pick and choose. Oh, we're devotees, we don't care. No, you're dealing with material energy. Material energy cares. You don't care, material energy cares. Who are transcendental? Are we? Right? If we are, then we won't have any issues. Someone who's transcendental has no issues. Right? There's no question of morality or justice or economics because it's all about chanting. Right? So if we're worried about those things, then we have to stay within the boundaries. Yes?
How can you define an issue?
That something becomes the forefront, a misgiving, let's put it that way. It's a misgiving. A misgiving means it's not just a doubt, but it's something that takes prominence within one's mental state. You know, like you could have a doubt about authority, but if you explain it logically, the doubt is cleared, because doubt means it just doesn't make sense. You don't understand it. You okay? That's why we generally keep a plant on top so you don't see it, you know? You know, so you can see it's there and then don't bump into it. Sorry we didn't have a plant on top today. Right? Does that make sense? That's why there's a tulsi on the stumba, because otherwise people would trip over the stumba. You know, that's where stumble comes from. You know, the people who bump into stumbas, they're stumbling, so then that's why. So you always have to keep a tulsi on top of the stumba so that people, no one trips over it. That makes sense? Yeah. That always happens, right? When you want to sneak out very quietly, you know, without disturbing anybody, then... Okay, so does that make some sense there? You know, a little bit of the detail that Manu gets into and also why some of these we don't worry about. But at the same time, we see there's a lot to learn from the appendices, right? So we'll get to them, but it may take us some time. By time, I mean years. Okay, so that basically... gives. So what we're going to do, if we look on where do we start? So then in here on page 8, we see how it works, is you're going to have these titles. You know, so some of the titles, if they're really big, then they're just describing. So discourse 1 is creation order of the sacred text. I mean, the origin, circular invocation. So that's what's within it, because there's no numbers on it. So it's connected with discourse 1. Then you'll see that there's bold under there. So that what that does is that says in one sentence what that verse says. Right? Or a group of verses. So if it's the important stuff, it's like each verse. And sometimes it's so the original idea is we're going to go through these points, right? Does that make sense? But somehow the printing, then it's all together, because it didn't, this particular file didn't have this separated off. Right? Then you'll see under that within the regular text, right? Is that's the actual verse of the Manu. And it has the number after, like V11 means verse, first discourse 1, verse 1. Then, you know, verse, you know, discourse 1, 2, like that it goes. So you can easily find things. Then after that, you see in some of them, there's a vritti. So vritti does two things. One, it defines the words, like here in the third verse. Then it says, how did that get? Okay. It says self-existence, so we won't know what that means, self-existence, but that means Swayambhu, Lord Vishnu, because Swayambhu, which means self-existent, can refer to Swayambhu Vamanu, right, because he just manifest, or it can be Lord Brahma, who's just manifest on a lotus, or it can mean Vishnu, who is the origin and, you know, unmanifested. So here we'll give a, you know, so that you know clearly who you're talking to. Because in this first chapter, it will go back and forth between them quite often, right? Or it will give some explanation, as we see in one through four, the vritti. Then it gives some detail. So that we'll get into. So our main focus will be on these headings and these bold, you can say centralized sentences. That's what we're going to study. But feel free to read as whatever you like. Just don't become confused, right? No one should be pulling out their sika and running out into the street screaming and waving their arms. Yes.
Yeah, is this translation in any way edited by devotees?
No. This, which is the fun part, this is one or two words where the guy couldn't even figure out what he was talking about, which is only in philosophy generally. Or sometimes in certain cultural things. This is Max Müller's translation that was actually done by Bühler, like that. So he had Bühler, another German, do the translation, and he, I guess, must have looked at it or authorized it. Max Müller was given £10,000 back in the 1830s. So that's a lot of money then. To translate the Vedas in such a way that it will make them look, you know, stupid or repulsive or something like that. In other words, the idea is they're Christians and they've come across this savage, you know, low-class tribal culture called, you know, the Vedic culture, which has vast greater literatures and details than they had ever dreamed of. But because they're Christians and they're white, they can't be something less than these savages. And so, therefore, because they were seeing is that the culture is so strong and so efficient and works so well, and the family and community units are so strong, they're not going to be able to break it down through their administrative methods. Right, you know, just on how they deal and laws and taxes, they're still going to remain devout Hindus. So what they did in the 30s, it became clear that the only way that they're going to get them to break down the culture is to make them think like they do. And how to make them think is by educating them how they're educated. It means educate the Indians like the British are educated. So at that time, they created schools because they couldn't educate everyone. They could only educate the aristocracy, because they're the leaders anyway, the society. So those from the high class, Brahmin, Kshatriya, and Vaishya families, right? They would be afforded to go to these schools. And because they're the leaders, when they go to the schools, they'll study, you know, from this new perspective. They'll have doubts in their own culture. Then they'll think like the British. Then the British will be able to rule them very nicely. Right? So that was their idea. So they opened all these schools and they had all these literatures translated so that then the so-called educated Indian could understand that there's problems here, academic problems. It doesn't make sense. Unfortunately, though, it did work that they did change the mentality of the Indians, where they did have a doubt in their own culture. The problem was, as it also then, because they're educated by them, in that same thing, then there's the element of, you know, being your own authority. Because the British, they want to be the authority. So now you've educated in their thing. You want to be the authority. So it backfired on them. And then by the 1850s, when, you know, that 20 years of those generation had gone through their system, you know, graduated, then they wanted to be independent of the British and run their own country. And so it took from the 1850s to, I think it was 1947, so almost 100 years. Then finally, then India got independence from them. They worked for that. But at the same time as the culture had been changed, because when India got independence, instead of going back to their roots and following their culture, they took up the Western culture, you know, more strongly than even, you know, they would do things that even the British wouldn't recommend, you know, because it wouldn't be economically viable and good. You'd ruin the whole system. So, like that. Does that make sense? So, this is the fun. The very translation that was used to try to break down the Vedic culture, at this point, we're using it to establish what's the actual culture. So I thought that would be a nice slap in the face. And this is also the translation that all the, you know, those nice and intelligent academics accept like that, because it's done by a Westerner. You know, if Indian did it, it would be biased, you know. Right? So, from all sides, then, it's a respected translation, but confusing at times, like that. Is that okay? Like that. Anything else? I'm thinking it's, you know, everyone's traveled today, it's late, so then can end. So if there's nothing else on, in other words, this is how the thing is. What we'll do is we'll go through, I'll be reading these points, making some comments. A few places we'll go into the translation where there's more need of more detail. Right, where there's not, we'll just pass through. If you have a question on it, that we may have to go into translations, or we might even have to go into the appendix to get it. So also, if you've read things, if you like, feel free. If you don't worry about it. We'll be going through. We'll go through how much we can this year, right? And then what we don't, then we'll continue next year. Because this is not something. In other words, the Vedic concept is in you know, 10 days you don't become expert at something, right? In 10 days you learn these principles on which now you contemplating them over the next year will be able to get more and more efficiency at it. Then we'll discuss again, and does that make sense? Because the idea is you get something, it takes time to practice it and to apply it. So even if it takes years, still it's done. Does that make sense? You know, so one could say, well, that's so long, we have to do something immediately. You know, ISKCON administration has been going for how long? Right? You know, so therefore, you know, a few years I don't think is a waste of investment like that. Because if you produce people who, devotees who actually understand how administration works, then there'd be a lot less problem. Does that make sense? Right? Because in the past, you see, is things are done for devotional point, but the central feature would be economics, right? What is just practical? What's efficient? Right? So that's niti. Niti is based on dharma, but if you don't know dharma and you apply niti, you'll end up with something that very short-lived. And so therefore, the complaints that people have now about the temple presidents and that in the past, right? Of course, they're complaining about the 70s and 80s. Always, that should always be reminded to them that a few years have passed, people have chanted Hare Krishna. Hopefully it has an effect, right, if we have any faith in it. So that would mean the situation's changed. So when we deal with these, we're living in the past. Are we learning from the past? No, we're only having issues about the past. Because learn means, okay, what worked? Great. Because point is complain all you want, but there's never been that much opulence in the society as in the 80s. Right? When all the things that they say was absolutely going wrong, that's when the greatest opulence is there. Why? Because dharma was being followed, and therefore there was artha. But because they don't understand the dharma, they were dealing with it as niti, so they got a short-term results. So therefore it fell apart. If they'd understood the dharma, they could keep it going and then refine and remove the difficulties that are there. Right? If the temple president is insensitive to the, what do you call it, the devotees in the temple, all you have to do is make them sensitive. The solution is not remove the temple president, right? Because that's against Dharma. That there's a president, he's in charge, that's Dharma. That he's using it just to get short-term things done and not seeing a bigger picture and dealing with people, right? That's niti, so that's not as efficient. It means it's efficient in getting something done, but it's not efficient in the long term because socially it'll have repercussions, right? Duryodhana's application of niti was efficient, right? Got rid of the Pandavas, he got the kingdom and all that, but it was short-lived because, you know, 14 years later he was dead because they were back. Right? So it didn't work so good. That makes sense? You know, and that will tell you that's a long time. But here, look at this, 40 years. So, you know, that's already, you know, three cycles of Duryodhana's stupidity. Is that okay? Okay, so then with that, we'll start tomorrow at 10:30 and then go for some, you know, at some point we'll have a little break. And like that, and then continue. So we're basically doing about 3.5 hours of discussion, like that. And then, Hari Bol. Janitai. Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki. Janitai Gaura Premanandi.